Welcome back to Mixed Bag. I'm here with Francesco and Isaac. Hey guys.
Hey.
Hello there.
So we will be covering the May 2024 game releases. But first of all, let's talk about what we've been playing the last couple of weeks. Abiotic Factor. What is that all about, Isaac?
every time you think of the name, you're like, am I saying it right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a survival crafting game, which I've been playing a lot of for work over the past few years, but this one's kind of unique. It goes for sort of like a Half-Life 1 sort of visual style and like aesthetic. You're basically playing as one of the scientists from Half-Life, or like it's up to a 6-player multiplayer, and basically exactly like Half-Life, everything's gone terribly wrong. And you basically just got to try and get out, but it takes you through like a bunch of areas of like the facility and a bunch of like portal worlds. So it's kind of like Zen in the original Half-Life, but there's 6 like portal worlds currently in. The first one's basically just like a straight up like Silent Hill sort of area, like really foggy and stuff. But for the whole crafting thing, you're going around like the facility and like breaking down like desks and like computers and stuff, and like using all the parts to build new things, and like stealing a bunch of electricity from all the power supplies and things like that. It's a very different feeling one. It's like another survival game called Enshrouded, where it doesn't use like randomly generated areas and stuff. So it has like a story that once early access ends will actually have like a conclusion to it as well. But yeah, it's very interesting, very difficult solo. It's clearly designed for at least like 2-3 players, I'd say. But you can tweak some of the settings to make it a little bit easier. But yeah, it's an interesting survival game. Seems to be doing pretty well. Hopefully it won't take too long to come out of early access and like Valheim.
Or most of early access games.
Oh yeah, a lot of them were like, it'll be in early access for like up to a year, and then it's like 2 years later, it's like still not out.
If it even comes out in 2 years.
Yeah, but this one has like a pretty decent roadmap. There's already a fair amount in it, and it's like the way it's set up, they can kind of add more chunks to it in like a normal way. You can kind of just return and like keep playing as more stuff's added without really needing to start a new save file. It definitely like should be finished, I'd say, within the next year or two, unless something really catastrophic happens, but seems unlikely with this one.
Speaking of survival, survival underwater is also very challenging. What is Endless Ocean Luminous all about? Is that the new Nintendo Switch hit of 2024?
I wouldn't definitely say a hit, but I suppose it's one of the last games Nintendo is going to release.
One of the games.
Now that Switch 2 is a thing, it's real, but we don't know if it's going to be called the Switch 2. Anyway, Endless Ocean Luminous, basically. I don't know if you ever played the first Endless Ocean games. I didn't, to be honest.
Nope.
There were only 2 games, and they released the on Wii. And after playing Luminous, I'm kind of seeing why this game died. jokes aside, it's kind of a chilling game. It's one of those games that you can just lay down on your couch, bring your Switch in endless mode, and just do a few minutes of sessions or whatever, because it's a very simple game. You just swim underwater and you push air to scan the fishes. That's it, really. There's really nothing else to do. I'm not exaggerating things. It's basically all the gameplay has to offer. So it's really, really simple. They advertised it a lot with the multiplayer function, but it's basically the same thing as playing a single player. Only there's players who can attach the emotes to the random fishes and stuff.
Multiplayer for up to 30
players. It can be
good
if you're playing with friends, but otherwise it's basically the same thing, just more chaotic.
Hmm. Do you get matched with other players? Is there matchmaking?
No, I think it just sets you randomly on a lobby. It gives you a code. It gives you a code of that server, so if you want to play with other players, Once you have that code, you can give it to your friends and they can join you.
Nice.
Yeah, there's it's a cool thing that even if you have these many randomly generated maps, each of them has a code. So if you want to drop out and come back later, or if you just want to play it but with your friends, you can just note a code somewhere and just tell it to your friends. But honestly, you don't even need to have your friends. It's just very chilling.
You can't hunt, right?
No, there's no hunting. There's no.
The whale is exploding, but I'm not sure what that is on that picture that I just linked.
Wait a second. Let me see the picture. So I
can... research points.
Okay, so yeah, that's for the name. It's called Luminous because every fish is basically covered by light.
Ah.
And by scanning them, you get this light. You need this light for some stuff in the story, basically to hear the ocean or whatever. It's not really a good story, but it's basically the excuse to let you see what the actual features are.
Yeah.
And which ones have you scanned and which one have you not. It's basically just a gameplay excuse. But yeah, these are the random light things that you're seeing. A weird thing about this is that to complete the actual story, you basically need to uncover the 99 mysteries or whatever. You have to do immersions over and over and over and over again just to progress in the story and finish it. So it's a very weird decision. Like, you're gonna get bored two or three immersions done like this.
Could have called it Endless Ocean 99.
Maybe. It doesn't support 99 players, though. I think only about 30 or something.
That's quite a lot as well, yeah.
Yeah. For a Switch game, that's still a lot, but... Yeah, as you can see in the screenshot, it's not exactly very demanding, graphics-wise, so...
There are more players than animals at points, then?
Sorry?
Are there more players than animals at points, if you have a full server?
No, I think there's still a way lot more animals. Like, the swim is warm sometimes, and so it's very difficult to just track everything.
And is it one consistent world, or are there, like, loading times?
No, once it's loaded, you just stay there. It's just a one huge map that you explore. It takes a while to load, but once you're there, it's done.
When you swim from one end to the other, how long do you take? Is it like a few minutes or like a few hours?
The map is pretty huge. So it's basically like a checkboard. There's basically a checkboard like A1, A2. Think of it as that. And every area can take like, if you want to explore it all, about 1 hour and a half, I think. Oh. But the online sessions last around 1 hour at most. I believe there's a countdown from what I played.
Sounds pretty good, but I don't know if it's worth €50 for everybody.
Yeah, even the fact that it costs €50, I think Nintendo knows this isn't really a hit game.
If it was included with Nintendo Switch Online, it would be a good deal.
It includes a 7-day trial.
Wow. Yeah, okay, nice.
Very generous, I know, but they really wanted you to play the online, I suppose.
And you probably can only use it if you haven't used a trial before.
No, I think you use it again. That's nice. It's not cumulative, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I suppose this is one of those games you can grab if they are €20 or whatever, and you just want to kill a few minutes time. Definitely not a story. It's not worth your time. Just do a few shillings immersions if you're into that thing. Otherwise, I'm not sure how many players would actually enjoy this one.
Yeah,
shame, because there was potential, but I think they did the minimum effort possible to this game. So yeah.
Well, at least it has a decent multiplayer, apparently.
I suppose so, but you basically do the same things you do in single player. Like, it does almost nothing, unless you play with friends and you actually communicate somewhere, like, I don't know, Discord or whatever.
Yeah, we can do your own challenges.
Yeah, I'm not sure otherwise it's going to be that much worth your time. Yeah. And I don't think there's many players who have 30 friends ready to join in the social. So, it's kind of a waste, but...
From a game that doesn't have a lot of story to a game that is very narrative focused, Indica was recently released. It's set in Russia in the Middle Ages, not exactly clear what year. And you play the nun Indica, who gets thrown out of a church. And yeah, it's a journey of self-discovery. Her companion is the devil himself. Apparently, at least in the beginning. We will see how that turns out then if you play the game. That takes around only 4 to maybe 6 hours if you take really long. And yeah, it has really nice graphics. But yeah, gameplay-wise, it doesn't offer a lot new. Kind of like a Plague Tale meets Death Stranding, maybe. With Death Stranding being the gameplay part. Visually, it looks nice. Has some very explicit scenes, like 3 in it. A bit forced. But, yeah.
Nothing too spicy to talk about.
They're very hard to watch, actually. And in between, you do some random bland puzzles, environmental puzzles. So yeah, it's difficult. It's a difficult one. If you like narrative experiences, like Hellblade, for example, which we will get to later as well, since the second part is coming out pretty soon, then this is for you. But if you're not into that, maybe another game is for you. That is called Tales of Kanzera. What can you tell us about that, Francesco?
I already did mention that game last month, since I did try the first few hours. But since then, I did finish it, so I guess I can talk about a few more. There's not that much else to add, so to just sum it up, it's a cute short Metroidvania, and that goes a lot into the message of you losing a dear one and how you slowly try to cope with it, but in a different way that most media used to tell about it. You know, they usually tell you about the 5 stages of grief or whatever, and here it's handled very differently. There's still some kind of stages of grief, but it's not as obvious and it's not as exactly as you will find in other books, movies, or whatever. I find
there's a strong character development, right? Because like the first hour, and the main character is very unsympathetic. But I think it changes a lot during the game.
Yeah,
right?
You see the development of the car. It's basically its own way to cope with grief.
Yeah.
The way he lashes out at the spirit of death, which accompanies you. And even death itself is portrayed very differently.
Okay.
You see it as a kind old man who just wants to understand what you're going through. It's a very interesting portrayal.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say no more if you haven't finished the game, but what's very interesting is that the use of Metroidvania is not just as an excuse to give you something to do in the game, but it's also a way to also portray the development of the character himself. Because when you progress through the game, you will get to certain parts where you power up or just meditate, and this serves as a way to increase your health. And you can see through these parts, your character actually reflects on his past, and it's a way to learn to cope with the passing of his father. So I think that was a very clever idea. This was a very personal game, so because the author, which also voices the main character, also never got over the loss of his father. So these are things that are all very present in this game. It's available on PlayStation Plus Extra if you're willing to try it out. I suggest you do so if you're a fan of Metroidvania. It's not the best Metroidvania out there, but it's short and it's a very interesting one. It's at least worth a shot.
That seems to have been like, and like all I've really heard of it is it's like not really like the best of like the genre, but it's still like cool, I guess. It's still interesting.
Yeah, you said it right. It's interesting. It's still good, decent. And I especially like the message and the story itself. As gameplay itself, yeah, that's been better. But it's this guy's first game, Captain So Slack. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. And is it better than Prince of Persia?
No, Prince of Persia is a better Metroidvania game. If you would ask me about the three Metroidvanias I recently played, I'd say Metroid Dread in first, Prince of Persia second, and this one in third. As for if I had to choose three I recently played, like the ones that came out lately.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's more, but I'm going with my own experience.
And also the voice acting is very nice. The English one that you've encountered, and I've played it in Swahili. It's also, to me, it sounds very authentic.
Yeah, I didn't play this Swahili, but if it's as good as in English, I can expect definitely. It's going to be emotional as well.
Yeah.
The story and the voice acting is definitely the best part, yes. And I also like the aesthetic of the game itself. They try to recapture the African mythologies and settings quite well. But yeah, the gameplay itself, as we mentioned, there's better. It's not the best Metroidvania game itself.
Yeah.
It's still cool, especially if you try it for free on PlayStation Plus, if you're
free.
If you're on extra. Yeah. Yeah, free on quotation marks, I know, but if you have PlayStation Plus Extra, it's worth checking out at the very least.
I'm not sure if the next game is very emotional, but I think Isaac will tell us. Rabbit and Steel, co-op action roguelike.
Yeah, its story's pretty minimal. In fact, if you play multiplayer, they're just outside of like the opening tutorial thing, there is no story. They actually made it so like any of the story content is single player exclusive, but it's not actually that much anyway. It's basically like between stages you'll sometimes get like new dialogue and stuff. I think they just didn't want to try and figure out how to have it work if you're playing online, like if different people had like different progression through it. But it basically works as a way of, because since it's a roguelite, you'll be doing like a bunch of runs, so they kind of have a story to say, like the kind of like, you know, have like an in-game reason for why you're doing multiple runs like over and over again. Like everybody's like been taken over by a spell, and when you like win the fights, they just kind of get knocked out for a bit. So like that's how they kind of justify it, as like, oh, each day you're just doing a different loop, and each one could technically happen in the story.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's basically like a combination of like shoot 'em up games like Toho and all that, but with Final Fantasy 14 or other MMO raid mechanics, where like you have to like avoid AoEs and like do certain mechanics and things. And I know for multiplayer, which I didn't get to try, there's like multiplayer specific ones where you like everybody has to like spread apart to avoid taking damage and things like that. It's really cool. I wasn't 100% sure like how interesting it would be after a little bit, like if it get too repetitive, but it's just a fun game. Like it's fun to learn the mechanics and stuff. It's a roguelite, but they don't make it too random. Like there's random loot and stuff that can affect like how you play and the upgrades for your like abilities, but they keep it like just like that, like same, I guess same is not quite the right word, but like they don't vary things up too much, so you actually have a chance of like learning stuff, learning the fights, because when you get to like the hard mode and stuff, things get pretty difficult, and then there's still a difficulty above hard mode too.
Oh. Is there a giant like Pokeball as a boss?
A giant what now?
A giant Pokeball.
Yeah. It's called a full moon treasure sphere. It looks like a Pokeball.
Oh boy.
At least it was in the announcement trailer. Maybe they had to remove it because Nintendo asked them to.
No, those are the things that have the loot between battles and
the world
stuff.
Bosses, basically, probably.
No, they're literally just treasure chests, basically, but you have to like damage them to open them. But yeah, because like all the characters are like animal themed, I guess. It mostly just applies to what animal ears they have, really.
Well, it does shoot, so I think it's a boss actually. But it's not an animal. It's on the Steam page at 19 seconds, the announcement trailer. I think it's the first trailer. But yeah, don't let me distract you.
No,
tell us about Radderly, the mithril dragon, which looks like a giant unicorn.
I've seen the thing on the trailer. It's just the way it's edited. So like it goes from the boss to just like opening one of those.
Mm.
Yeah, like all the bosses have like two phases to them. So you fight like the animal, like human sort of form, and then they all transform into like an animal. And obviously one of the sets is dragons, because of course. But yeah, like lots of cool mechanics. Each area has like its own sort of theme to it. Like the dragon area has a lot of like AoEs that like expand after a few seconds, so you kind of have to judge where the safe spots are, or like keep moving between safe spots. And then there's another one that like freezes everybody in place, and then a bunch of mechanics play out, and then you have to like memorize like what mechanics take like happening next and stuff like that. It's just like it is very much like a smaller scale like MMO raid sort of experience with some randomness. It's cool. Like, it's good in single player. I'd imagine it's probably even better multiplayer. It has online, it has local. I think it even has local and online, like, as you can do both. You could play, like, a few people local and a few people online at once.
Yeah.
It's just a solid game, really.
It looks pretty interesting, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool.
1000 Cross or X Resist came out today. I'm not really sure if it's a cool game. I'm kind of torn on it. It has a nice backstory, kind of like in Venba, an immigrant story of a Chinese family in Canada. But then also it turns into like a Neptunia kind of game in a sci-fi setting with sisters who are clones, kind of MGS style. And fight for power against the All Mother, I think it's her name. And yeah, it's a narrative experience with no combat and very repetitive areas, like a citadel type of structure, like a Mass Effect. It has very varying camera types, and visually, it's quite, changes a lot. Kind of like in Indica, where you also have those sprite parts. I don't know if you've seen them.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for that. I was like, what's even going on?
Yeah. And the same as in this game, actually. But yeah, story-wise, it's not as compelling as Indica. And a very rushed ending. At least it concludes in a way that it's fits to the intro, but you still have no idea what's going on at the end. At least I didn't have it. And yeah, playtime was like, let me check, around 5 hours for me. It's not a must buy this month, but yeah, if you like Neptunia and Venba, maybe you could try it.
Still the weirdest combo.
Yeah. I think that's it for the main part of the games we've played this month. So we can jump into the releases of May.
Yep, which a lot of them were today.
Endless Ocean we've already covered. And I think it said Inkida on the Eurogamer site. I think that's Indica.
Yeah, yeah, they wrote it wrong, but it's Indica, yeah.
We had a surprise release on May 6th this week with Hades 2. When did they announce it? The day it was released, or maybe a day earlier?
No, the day itself it was released, it just came out.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
They did a technical test, then they ended it, and a few days after, hey, guess what? Hades 2 is out.
Yeah, I
and all the other indies that were supposed to come out this week are all very thankful for that move.
There's still... There's something else that's about, like... the other one's still Hollow Knight, isn't it? Where everyone's like, please don't just like Shadow.
Exactly, yeah, Sing Song. It's like, please don't come out when I actually release it.
But, hopefully, it's not owned by Microsoft.
Yeah, I kind of knew, or I kind of sort of knew it was going to release then. I wasn't 100% sure because they were basically like, for review stuff, it was kind of like, You can like reviews can come out at this time, or if early access already happens before that, and it's like, okay. So it's like, but yeah, like the actual announcement, they just it was just like, yep, here you go, Hades 2, it's out. And yeah, the player count was pretty high. So obviously this time it's not like a timed Epic exclusive or anything like the first game. Because the first one during early access was, like, I think it was for a year, like a lot of Epic stuff. I think it's still on Epic, but yeah, it's not exclusive this time.
As long as it's not exclusive. Everyone's happy.
I did buy Hades 1 on Epic ages ago, back when they were doing like the really big discounts. Because it was like, it was really cheap. I don't think it's even been as cheap as that on Steam at any point. But yeah, I'll probably wait until it's fully out. But I've heard that it basically has as much content as the first game already, so...
Yeah, I'm also waiting because I don't want to, like, spoil myself too much. Like, when it's complete and I go to play it,
yeah,
I'll be like, yeah, I already played it, so I won't be that much interested, you know? So, for me, it's best to wait.
Or if you have your build and they change the balance completely, then yeah, you have to redo it again.
So yeah, and that would be like annoying as well, so it's probably best to just wait. You'll be the beta testers, and I'll just wait.
At least for a few weeks, maybe, until they ironed out the most important stuff. So next week we're getting a few interesting releases with Homeworld 3, strategy game, finally.
Been getting delayed a little bit.
When was Homeworld 2 released? 2003, wow.
Oh yeah, it's been a while since the last one. Obviously they had like the remaster or whatever to tie things over, but yeah.
Even that is 9 years old. Yeah.
Yeah, it's supposed to release like 2022, I think. And then, yeah, got delayed a few times.
Then another early access release on 14th of May, The Rogue of Prince of Persia.
Yeah, which looks interesting. It's also a case of it probably could have like not had the Prince of Persia branding and still been like the same. Everything else could have stayed the same as well.
Yeah.
It's still interesting that it's happening.
Yeah.
That Ubisoft is releasing an early access title. Basically, Ubisoft giving them the license and say, do whatever you want with it.
Yeah.
But they're cool.
Maybe it's sort of a test that they may do that for other franchises as well. So we will finally get another Splinter Cell.
Maybe.
A Splinter Cell game was actually in development, but we heard nothing about it since then.
Yeah, it's been weird with Splinter Cell. With Tom Clancy's.
I'm not holding out that much hope for that game, honestly. Give us a screenshot at least, I don't know.
They'll put him in another Tom Clancy game again. They'll put, what's even the main character called again in Splinter Cell? I've completely forgotten.
Sam Fisher,
yeah, that's the one. Because he was in, was it Wildlands or the other one? He was in one of them as like a cameo thing.
Wasn't it like a mobile one?
I mean, there was maybe that too, but it was like one of the open worldy ones. There was Break like
Point, Ghost Recon, maybe.
Yeah, it was like one of them. I forget the naming of like any of those ones.
Well, it wasn't Eurodriver because that's the sequel to Read Only Memories. Looking forward to that one on 16th of May.
I never finished the.
Been first. A while since the first came out. Yeah, 2064, I think is the first one.
But that hasn't happened yet. Yeah, it was a while ago. I think.
2015 or something.
Eurodiver kept getting delayed as well.
Yeah.
Like a lot of stuff.
Hopefully it runs well on Switch, but I don't see why it wouldn't.
Yeah, it should, but you never know sometimes with Switch releases.
You also never know with PlayStation releases on PC. Ghost of Tsushima Director's Cut is coming out on the same date on PC. We are still waiting on a copy to review it. And yeah, hopefully it will be a good port.
Yeah, it's like always kind of like 50-50-ish on Sony stuff on PC. It's like generally favorable now, but yeah. And obviously there's the whole PlayStation account thing for the multiplayer. But if it allows for like crossplay, then that's all right, I suppose.
Yeah. But if you don't play crossplay, you shouldn't need PSN account. But that wouldn't make it probably too complicated for the infrastructure.
Maybe it's probably just easier to just have it all be on one thing, and then just have it be opt out for crossplay. It seems to be how all of them do it now.
Senua's Saga Hellblade 2 will also be only on one thing, on the Xbox Series XS and on the PC. Hopefully we'll get a PlayStation port at some point.
Yeah, probably a PS5 version at some point.
Yeah.
Let's hope they don't close Ninja Theory after this game.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Please stop crossing down studios.
The actual marketing for Hellblade 2 has been a bit strange as well.
Yeah, like today they just posted a post that said Airblade 2, 21 May. What the hell is up with that?
It's
a little back in the game.
Yeah, it's like, I think it was just because people were like, with the whole thing of the...
Yeah, they were saying that you have mentioned Airblade 2, like, why are you mentioning... And they said, you know what, we're gonna mention it. Airblade 2, 21 May, are you happy now? But like...
Yeah, because it's like, they showed up a bit like a while back, and then since then it's been pretty much like absent from everything. It's a bit of an odd one, really.
Yeah.
And there's also the fact that it's probably going to like need like really high specs to get it to run okay.
They also said that it's going to have black bars for anyone who doesn't have an ultra-wide monitor, which... Oof.
Oh boy.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good at all. Like, I'm not watching a movie. I'm trying to play a game, guys. Like, read the room.
It's a movie game. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not a movie. That's my point.
Almost. Hopefully, the combat is better than the first one. That wasn't really enjoyable.
Yeah, hopefully. The combat was fairly weak in that one.
What else are we getting? Haunty is coming out on 23rd of May. An interesting roguelike top-down title.
Yeah, the nice visual style.
Yeah. Played it a bit, didn't really get the story. But yeah, nice combat. World of Goo is getting a sequel as well.
Yeah, it's weird to see that one coming back after all this time.
And then Switch exclusive is also an interesting choice.
I think it's...
probably Switch also coming to PC.
PC. But like, it's probably Epic only.
Yeah, it's Epic only.
But I think it's like a later date as well, for reasons unknown. Got to make it extra complicated.
I'm not sure. I may not access this content on the Epic Store page. Probably I gave the wrong above here.
Yeah, it's coming out the 2nd of August on Epic.
That's weird. Coming earlier to Switch than PC. That's
It's a very weird release schedule.
And we're getting another Switch game on the same day, Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door, the remake of the Wii game.
GameCube.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, the there might be one of the Wii game eventually, but...
Wii, it was Super Paper Mario.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which was like kind of like the last one where, and I know some people had issues with it, but it was kind
the only decent one of the trilogy. There's only a trilogy. The other ones don't exist.
Yeah, like after that, everyone's kind of like, no.
Yeah, just nope.
But yeah, I know there's been some like discourse about the whole it's a thing, but like I'm 99% certain there'll be a patch or whatever for when the Switch 2 comes out where it'll be 60.
Yeah.
But they kind of went heavier on like the visuals over like keeping a 60 FPS. Like obviously there's timing based stuff for the combat, but it's not as bad as like when Bandai Namco released Tales of Symphonia HD, which had like a bunch of visual issues and was also 30 FPS. So that was a weird one. Like I don't think it's as bad, even if there's timing based mechanics, I would prefer the 60 FPS.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, Switch 2 will probably allow for that anyway.
Yeah, I'm really hoping they do, because I love the first game and I know that no matter how much they try, it's gonna make a difference.
putting
it in 30 FPS.
Unless they like make all the timings way easier or something.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they did from what I heard. Like, guarding is so much easier in this version from what I heard. Yeah. And that's really disappointing for someone who loved the original game. But, oh well.
Is this one better than Sticker Star? That's the only one that I played.
Definitely. Sticker Star doesn't exist.
Yeah, like...
I've never played
it. It's not a real game. You just imagine it.
Yeah. Well, I kind of enjoyed it, but it's the only game of the franchise that I played.
You have Switch Online, right?
Yeah.
Then go play the first Paper Mario after this podcast is over.
Will you?
Yeah, the first one's pretty good, too. I guess they just didn't want to remake it because it would have took a little bit more work. Yeah. And I think it's a bit shorter than Thousand Year Door from what I remember.
There's also the fact that it's already offered for free.
Yeah,
the second one is a GameCube game, so they said, let's just remake it.
Yeah.
It's also the most beloved one anyway, so easy money, basically.
Mark,
so you don't need to play the first game to enjoy it.
How many transitions do you want to destroy in this episode? Mark Hamill is returning to your console or PC in Multiversus on the 28th of May. Guanum, I think you're very happy about this returning, right?
Maybe I will be happy. We need to see how it's going to get handled, yeah. Because Warner Bros. Destroyed it pretty hardly last time.
It looks like they made it slower again.
No, I think that was just an editing effect.
Yeah, that was the thing. It was like people were kind of wondering if it was just like they'd edit it that way. And
yeah,
then
they did show some other trailers, and no, the speed actually seems pretty much weird. The same. They did like add a few mechanics like parrying, so I'm interested to see how it turns out.
I wonder if the monetization is getting changed up at all.
That's my biggest issue. Like, the monetization was... I won't say predatory, but it was really not good. It was getting worse with time. And that's what, for me, killed the game in the first place. So hopefully they learned the lesson. We shall see. It's gonna come out soon. Let's see if this time it can actually stay.
Yeah.
And not get killed earlier. It was actually a good game, so if they fix these issues. There's also the fact of the characters that at first they did drop them out constantly, and then all of a sudden they just stopped. And that also killed the game. Like, they didn't have a clear line of how they should do updates. Hopefully they take things more calmly instead of releasing a character every 2 minutes, because that was not sustainable.
I don't see why.
We shall see.
That's almost it, I guess. I mean, F1 24 is also coming out. We will probably do some tournaments in that. I don't have any hope that it will be much different from the previous 5 games.
It has a bigger number on it.
Yeah, and you get skins for the old game if you pre-order the game. The most expensive version of the game, of course.
Obviously.
Yeah.
It's just €90. Yeah.
Yeah, they're the main one for me.
No classic cars, no classic tracks. They removed a lot. No career, no story mode. But yeah.
No cars, no drivers, no gameplay.
You have to design the courses yourself. Well, that actually would be fun, but no, there's no track editor.
Yeah, that'd be too cool. They don't want that.
It's also very hard to mod these games these days, so you will only see mods for the older games. Hopefully at some point that will change. Once EA is getting bought by another bigger company, maybe.
If I'm going to get Microsoft to buy them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say the other main release that I'm interested in this month for me, pretty much right at the end, is Nine Souls, which finally has a release date. It's been, I don't think it was announced that long ago, but it feels like it was ages. It's like a Metroidvania with a really nice art style and like kind of like a parrying focus, kind of like Sekiro.
Oh, looks very colorful, interesting.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what they specifically called the style. They had like a specific, because you know, like having to put like something punk, or they call it Tau punk, where it's like Taoism and cyberpunk. But it's a cool style. That there's been a demo out for a little while now.
Hopefully the demo is not only in Japanese, like the screenshots.
Yeah, the demo is in English too. I think they just forgot to have any English screenshots too. But I think it's only like a couple.
But yeah, only the skill tree. Yeah,
yeah. It looks cool. It's obviously releasing during a pretty busy month for indie stuff. But I guess nowadays that's every month anyway. Like today, there's a bunch of stuff releasing all at once. Oh dear. But yeah, still lots of cool stuff.
Yeah. So another interesting month, and we will probably talk about more about these games the next month once we've played them.
Yep, and so far next month's looking a little quieter, for the most part anyway. There's still time.
Apart from the Elden Ring DLC that everybody
will play. I think a bunch of releases are like, let's just hide. Even the director for Final Fantasy XIV was like, yeah, we're gonna give you like a week to play the Elden Ring DLC before the expansion for 14's out.
Yeah. Have fun. Okay, thank you guys for joining me. Thank you for listening. See you next time.
See
you. Yes. See you.
So now my heart's like a frozen stone.